The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. We're starting today with the Lifestyle section with Oprah's Insider. Oprah welcomes you to the Insider community, and this article is by Oprah Winfrey. Hi, Insiders. I hope you're having a peaceful and relaxing Sunday wherever you are. You know, one of my favorite things about the Oprah Daily site is how engaged all of our listeners are, all you guys. Over the past couple of years, I've watched this community come alive in the comment sections of our weekly intentions and our Life You Want classes and our standalone stories. I've watched connections from between all of you, and I've seen you get raw and very vulnerable. And I felt really privileged to get to know some of you. That's why we want to give you more. So we've spent the past few months building a place for this community to gather. I remember early on some of you were saying this is what we needed to do, and we listened. So now we have a place where you can unpack your learnings from our latest class, debate the ending of a book club pick, vent, chat, and most of all, share your joy and your journeys and your aha moments. And so I'm pleased because today's the day we launch our new app and digital experience, the Oprah Insider Community, OIC. In it, you'll find daily prompts to inspire you, live masterclasses from Oprah Daily staffers, and some breakout areas where you can find your people, your village, and discuss the topics that matter most to you. Above all, it's a place where we can learn from one another. It's a place of empathy, diversity, open-mindedness, like-mindedness, where we can cheer each other on to live our best lives and be our most authentic selves. That's what the whole thing is about. So here it is. My invitation to all of you to join us. I've dropped the link below you to download the app, or if you prefer, you can use the desktop version. The team also put together a how-to just in case you have any questions. Gail, Adam, Pilar, and I are already part of this platform, and we look forward to welcoming you all soon. Have a great week, and go well. So here is a way to connect to the Oprah community if you would like to find out about it. You can download the app. It is Oprah Insider Community, Hearst Communications, Inc. And this one is designed for iPad. And they also have a connecting article, Your Guide to Using the Oprah Insider Community. Have no fear, your one-stop guide to our new community is here. And this article is by Shelley Copeland. We've created the Oprah Insider Community to give you a place to communicate, connect, and reflect on the pressing topics we take on at Oprah Daily. This new platform is an open invitation for you to respond, share, and post whatever's on your mind, and even connect directly with Oprah, Gail King, Adam Glassman, Pilar Guzman, and the entire Oprah Daily team. We want you to get the most out of your experience in the Insider community. Below is your guide to learning to navigate your new space. First things first. Access to the Oprah Insider community is reserved exclusively for Oprah Insiders. If you are not a member yet, you can join right here. With a membership, you'll also unlock access to unlimited stories across Oprah Daily, including Oprah's Weekly Intention, plus special deals on items in the Oprah Daily shop, and so much more. There are many ways you can access the community. We suggest accessing it as a mobile app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android. and you can download the app at Apple Store and Google Play Store. Alternatively, you can access the community on your desktop or mobile browser by going to community.opradaily.com. Explore the app. You're an insider and you've downloaded the app. Great! Now comes the easy part, discovering all of the wonderful benefits and spaces. When you first open the Oprah Insider app, you will be prompted to log in. Log in with the same credentials you use to access all your Oprah Insider membership benefits here on OprahDaily.com. Next, once you've agreed to our terms of use and accepted our community guidelines, you're ready to create your profile and upload an image. Please read through each section carefully as some fields are required. Welcome. Take a quick look at the top and bottom sections of your screen. The top section has filtered fields for you to quickly navigate the content of the app. Spaces, we'll get to that soon. Your feed, which lists each new content piece in chronological order, similar to what you see on Instagram, and a members directory. At the bottom, you have your home screen, a search function, a button to create new posts, your notifications tab, and your DMs or direct messages. The welcome section is the best place to go to get acquainted with the app. In our Start Here space, we answer the most frequently asked questions, share our community guidelines, and provide a quick reference guide to everything you need to know about each space. This is also where you can meet other members of the community by saying hello. Get to know fellow insiders and connect when you first join. Next, you'll see our prompt of the day chat, where each day we invite you to reflect on and respond to our daily practice of thought starters. We also have a space for you to hear from the team. Editors will share exciting updates about the community and highlight stories from Oprah Daily. We also created a holiday space where you're invited to share anything on your mind. Find your village. Our village spaces are designed to give you a deeper sense of connection with other insiders based on topics that are most important to you. We know that life can sometimes be challenging, so we encourage you to find support among a village of like-minded peers and even get the chance to interact directly with us and experts we invite to share their wisdom. Oprah. This is the space where you can respond directly to Oprah's weekly messages. Every Sunday, Oprah will share her weekly intention and invite you to reflect and connect with others on the topic she's focusing on for the week ahead. Please note, conversations that were previously held in the comment section of our Oprah Daily articles will now be held in this space. O Books. Calling all voracious readers, this section is for you. Our reading room is where you can connect with other readers on what you're reading now, or your all-time favorites. Plus, our resident book experts, Lee Newman, the director of Oprah's Book Club, and Charlie Burlock, our associate books editor, will share their recommendations and host office hours events. We also have a dedicated space where you can share your shelfies. Whether it's small and mighty, a nightstand piled high, or a color-coordinated grand bookshelf, we want to see where you keep your books. Take a peek into the space. You might find some inspiration. So I've gone over and connected into the Oprah's Insider community, and there are different sections on finding your village that you can discuss. One of the topics is menopause. 50% of the population goes through this midlife hormonal shift. Your menopause is still highly stigmatized and riddled with misinformation. We are determined to change this, but we know we can't do it alone. Hot flashes, achy joints, brain fog, painful sex, and sleepless nights, anyone? Well, this is your space to talk about it all. If you missed it when it came out, you might want to take a moment to check out our A to Z menopause curriculum. Oprah Daily editors will also tap a rotation of experts for their insight on this topic, just as we did for Oprah's The Menopause Talk last year. Here, expect to support one another in your journey of navigating both physical and non-physical symptoms. Start conversations with other women experiencing perimenopause, menopause, or post-menopause. To get started, click on the plus button at the bottom of the app to start your post and tell us, where are you in your menopause journey? If you aren't sure, take our menopause quiz and reflect on your result below. Any content here is for informational purposes only and does not constitute medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It should not be regarded as a substitute for professional guidance from your healthcare provider. So there are different sections in the Oprah Insider, and people can then make comments below. There is a section on weight. Oprah has been the most outspoken and vulnerable public figure about her lifelong weight struggle. In our recent The Life You Want class, Oprah, who was joined by leading experts, helped break down the science of the new weight loss drugs and take the shame out of the weight conversation. It was during this talk that she had her greatest aha moment of them all, that obesity is a disease, not a failure of discipline or character. In this space, we welcome you to share your thoughts and experiences along your own weight journey here in the Insider community. To get started, create a new post below by clicking on the plus button at the bottom of the app to start your post and tell us, how does weight impact your life? There is a section on relationships. Welcome to our relationship space. Relationships, romantic ones, friendships, and everything in between make us who we are. Here we want to hear what relationships bring you joy or heartbreak and help you connect with other insiders who can relate, empathize, or share in your journey. To get started, click on the plus button at the bottom of the app to create your post and tell us, who is the Gail to your Oprah? How does love currently show up in your life? There is another section on parenting. They say it takes a village to raise a child, and in this space we want you to find yours. We invite you to dive deep into the toughest parenting topics of our time, including the teen mental health crisis, which in a recent The Life You Want class, Oprah called the most pressing issue of our time. We want to hear about challenges of setting boundaries with toddlers, teens, and at every stage in between. We also want to share in your joy. Did your child just take their first steps? Are you celebrating a graduation? We want to hear it all right here. To get started, click on the plus button at the bottom of the app to start your post and tell us about a recent parenting win, an epic fail, or a moment you wish you could do over, and what's a parenting lesson you recently learned, maybe even the hard way. Another section is on grief. Grief can take so many forms, and despite our understanding of its stages, there is never any one way to move through it. It's also not just limited to death. In this space, we want to explore the ways in which we might grieve everything, from the loss of a parent or the end of a marriage, to entry into menopause or the empty nest phase of life. Here, you'll be able to connect with others who've been through something similar. As with all of life's challenges, we want to remind you that you are not alone. As Oprah shared after her father's passing in 2022, something happens when you stay open to receiving the blessings of your loved one's life. You get fortified. You get renewed to your purpose, your reason for being here. You get focused on the work you have left to do, and know that you have an angel guide working from the other side. Ready to share? Click on the plus button at the bottom of the app to start your post. This next section is caregiving. Caregiving is the ultimate act of love, and as we know, the ultimate sacrifice. Whether you are caring for an aging parent or a loved one, dealing with an illness, we're here to remind you that caregivers of the world need to fill their own cup too. In this village, we strive to help you do exactly that. Here, we'll reflect on the wisdom from the archive of O, the Oprah magazine, including a story by author, life coach, and longtime columnist Martha Beck, and share news stories to help our community members connect, share, and take care of themselves so they can show up for others. Ready to share? Click on the plus button at the bottom of the app to create your post and tell us how do you take care of yourself and others. And the last category under the village section is an LGBTQ plus category. Earlier this year, Oprah reflected on how the world has changed for the LGBTQ community in her lifetime, and how she watched that change happen firsthand in her years on The Oprah Winfrey Show. It was over 25 years doing The Oprah Show that we filmed. I can't even tell you how many episodes affecting gay people, Oprah wrote. And I was always so shocked at the backlash we would get. Well, I believe that every single person has the right to love who they want to love and to be the person they most want to be. And my hope for you, my insiders, is that you are living a life that lives authentic to you and that you have the support around you to do so, no matter your sexuality. In this space, we hope that you are living the life that feels authentic, that you feel you can love who you love, and that you find support in your connection with others right here in this community. To get started, click on the plus button at the bottom of the app to create your post, and tell us, how are you authentically living your best life? So other sections in the new Oprah Insider Community app, they have a welcome that has a start here that talks about how to navigate this site, a say hello where you give some information about yourself, a from the team section that has some of the word of the week sections in there, and then an events page that is talking about beauty awards, beauty director Kate Sandoval Box and beauty editor Genesis Rivas. And you can go inside and see their recommendations. There is a prompt of the day, and there's a holding space. The holding space, welcome to our general sharing space, where we invite you to post about the stories you can't stop thinking about, personal wins, frustrating setbacks, or anything that's on your mind. Ready to share? Click on the plus button at the bottom of the app to start drafting your post. And then below the village is next to find your village of those topics I just read. There's a section with Oprah's weekly intentions, and then an O Books section that has a reading room that is all the voracious readers. We want to discuss your favorite picks from Oprah's book club, your must-have summer beach read, your go-to comfort read, and so much more. Here you can connect with other readers on your favorite books, learn from Oprah and Oprah Daily editors, including Lee Newman, the director of Oprah's book club, and Charlie Burlock, our associate books editor in this space, as they share recommendations and host office hour events. To get started, create a new post below, click on the plus button at the bottom of the app, and tell us what book has made the biggest impact in your life. And below that are shelfies. And Shelfies has a lot of photographs of people that just took pictures of books that are in their house, different bookshelves, different pictures of things that they love surrounding their books. We're over in the Word of the Week. Bedroom gap. Do you and your partner have different libidos? Is it an issue? There's a name for that. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. Bedroom gap. This isn't the Bermuda Triangle in your home where single socks and hair ties vanish, but rather a split between men and women when it comes to sex. The term was coined by Maria Sophocles, MD, and OBGYN in a viral 2023 TED Talk, and it's also the title of her forthcoming book, It's the Difference in Sexual Capabilities and Expectations Between Men and Women in Midlife, she explains. Our bodies and libidos change, and this can create problems. Translation, your husband expects your sex life to stay the same post your 50th birthday and you feel bad about saying no, but also really don't feel able to say yes. Per usual, you can blame menopause and the hormonal nosedive that accompanies it. Reminder, we have an entire guide to the change. The loss of estrogen makes the vagina dry and less supple, paving the way for painful, penetrative sex. The problem is, your doctor might not explain this to you, and that leaves your partner even more in the dark. That's why the bedroom gap persists, Sophocles says. There's this huge gap in knowledge. So how can you start to bridge the gap? Step one is focusing on female pleasure. Start with our best advice for getting your sex life back after menopause, and a few midlife-friendly vibrators can't hurt either. Step two, talk to your partner, maybe with a therapist. They need to understand what you're going through and do their part, not just stick to the same old date night routine. We're over in wellness. Why is everyone wearing a continuous glucose monitor? Those little white discs are all the rage. Here's what they can and can't do. This article is by Sophia Lodato. Have you noticed people everywhere wearing continuous glucose monitors, CGM? On the subway, at the gym, in the grocery store. Those little circular white arm doodads, designed to measure blood glucose levels, are the accessory du jour. Almost 2.4 million people in the U.S. are wearing them, and the reason for the sudden rise may be that back in March, the FDA approved the first over-the-counter CGM. Now, even people who don't have diabetes or pre-diabetes have access to them, and advocates say they help them better understand the balance between blood sugar levels and a fine-tuned nutrition plan. But they don't come cheap, with most costing $100 plus a month. So are they worth the cost, or are they just another unnecessary health gadget? What is a CGM? Continuous glucose monitors are small devices that automatically track your blood sugar, aka your blood glucose level, throughout the day. They monitor with real-time glucose data and notify people that their sugar is about to go low, explains Rasa Kaslaskaite, and that's Kazlauskaite, MD, an endocrinologist and associate professor at Rush University Medical Group. Surprisingly, they don't actually take blood. Instead, they track your glucose levels in the interstitial fluid, a fluid that surrounds your cells just beneath the skin. CGMs generally consist of a small sensor inserted to the back of your arm or in your belly via needle. Sounds painful, but apparently it's less painful than most finger stick tests. A transmitter, the white circular thing you so often see, and a receiver that helps you assess the results, like an insulin pump or a smartphone app. Depending on the model, disposable CGM sensors should be replaced every 1 to 2 weeks. Some sensors can even last for up to 180 days, though you may have to replace the transmitter. Who uses them? When the FDA approved the first CGM in 1999, CGMs were meant to help people with all types of diabetes track their blood sugar levels. Unlike traditional home glucose meters like a finger stick or urine test, CGMs offer continuous tracking, leading to a more comprehensive look at your own blood sugar data. It revolutionized diabetes care, explains Kaslaskaite. People with diabetes are mostly managing it by themselves. How can you do that if you can't visualize your glucose levels? One firm estimates that more than 50% of Americans with type 2 diabetes, the most common form, will be using the device within 3 years. Another study concurs that CGM use among type 2 diabetics is rapidly increasing. But diabetics are just one population using them. One study noted the likely rise of use in non-diabetic CGM users and categorized them into 4 groups. People with diabetes-related diseases, people with non-diabetes metabolic diseases, people who want to improve on their health and wellness, and elite athletes. Some people, diabetics or otherwise, might have glucose elevations in response to stress, lack of sleep, or even in certain stressful situations. One of my patients with diabetes noticed that whenever he's on a Zoom call, his blood sugar goes high, says Kasalas Kaidi. This is due to our autonomic nervous system involuntarily putting out adrenaline, which makes you a bit more resistant to insulin. What are the benefits? One of the biggest advantages is that immediate feedback on your blood sugar levels. Because it continuously measures, it can help you make more informed decisions around food, medication, activity levels, and your sleep, anything that affects your blood glucose. This is particularly useful for people with diabetes or pre-diabetes, where you can set up alerts for high/low blood sugar to help prevent any dangerous health situations. But it has interesting benefits for people who don't have diabetes too. Continuous glucose monitoring might be the best tool we have for precision nutrition out of all metabolic, genomic, and other testing, says Kasalas Kaidi, citing a study from the journal Cell that monitored glucose levels and designed personalized diets for the study participants. One popular brand, Zoe, does the work for you by assessing the impact that a food has on your blood sugar levels, then assigning each food a score individual to you, based on the way your body metabolizes fats and sugars. It then gives tips on how to stabilize the blood sugar roller coaster. For example, for users who have glucose spikes in the morning, a protein-rich breakfast of eggs and whole wheat toast can help prevent the spike that a smoothie and carb-based cereal could induce. But keep in mind, the benefits of CGMs for non-diabetic users are certainly there, but they may be outweighed by the challenges involved. First of all, you can get what I like to call analysis paralysis, Kasalas Kaidi says. In other words, you could start to obsess over your blood sugar data, even to the point of misinterpretation, which leads to stress, anxiety, and even unnecessary restrictions on food or activity choice. It's reminiscent of orthosomnia when people get obsessed with tracking their sleep data. It actually can lead to worse quality sleep. An important thing, Kasalas Kaidi also notes, is that CGM sensors were developed specifically for people with diabetes, so those with no diabetes might have errors in their data just because of the different physiology. She's also concerned when people expect their glucose levels to be between certain exact numbers. There's just not enough information online about what normal glucose levels should be in people without diabetes, she says. In other words, each person's glucose levels respond differently to external factors, whether it's body heat, temperature, exercise, stress, or diet. For this group, there's no real right or normal glucose level. Lastly, but perhaps most importantly to note, CGMs are expensive. Many versions cost anywhere from $100 to $300 per month, depending on the brand and pharmacy. While they're life-changing for those with diabetes, for people without a strict medical need, it may be tough to justify the cost. But Kasalas Kaidi believes they have value. When used with professional guidance and those caveats in mind, I would agree that what you can measure, you can manage, she says. She has a point. We already measure things like our heart rate, our weight, our height, and even how many steps we take in a day. So why not our blood sugar if we can? Another article in Wellness, Naomi Watts, Coming in Hot. To all you women burning up from within, we see you and we salute you. Happy National Hot Flash Day. This article is by Rosie Hopegood. Naomi Watts first began experiencing perimenopausal symptoms at 36, as her film career shifted into high gear and she was thinking about having children. For her, the worst symptoms by far were the hot flashes and night sweats that left her exhausted, miserable, and when they snuck up on her in public settings, mortified. Watts was shocked at the impact menopause had on her body and the lack of public discourse around this all-consuming stage of life. Determined to support other women going through the change, she created the menopause product brand Stripes Beauty in 2022. In addition to offering pampering products, Watts, now 55, uses Stripes as a platform to drive the conversation about menopause forward because, while menopause may be part of midlife, midlife is a lot more than just menopause. Her latest endeavor is founding National Hot Flash Day, a day dedicated to raising awareness, squashing shame, driving research, and supporting anyone suffering from this diabolical symptom. What inspired you to start National Hot Flash Day? When you think of menopause, hot flashes are the most characteristic symptom, even in storytelling and on film. Certainly before I started menopause, I just thought of it as hot flashes and maybe mood swings. Obviously, it's just one of a litany of symptoms, but they can be the most uncomfortable and the most likely one to fill you with shame because they can happen publicly and at the wrong time. You hear stories of women having one in the middle of a board meeting, in a room full of men, even in the family space. It can hit you when you're least expecting it and be very, very demeaning. How would you describe a hot flash to someone who's never had one? It floods you with a physical feeling of heat, and your heart starts racing. It's like a strong palpitation takes over. That's the physical experience that I remember, but most of it feels emotional because you're just so mortified to be around people who might not know what's going on with you. I grew up in the UK where hot flashes are called hot flushes. And when I mentioned this to a doctor, she said that a flush is actually a truer description. Rather than a quick flash that comes and goes, a flush lasts for minutes and feels like an absolute flooding of heat that is uncontrollable. Do any particularly horrible ones stand out in your memory? I remember having one on a plane, and it was horrible. The first thing you want to do is take off your clothing and get your head into fresh air somehow, and neither of those things could happen. I had to just sit there and try and breathe through it. I was lucky not to experience that many hot flashes because I went on medication, hormone replacement therapy, almost right away, but I had night sweats for years. How did that impact your sleep and your well-being? No one is at their best when they're experiencing disrupted sleep. It creates depression, anxiety, and brain fog, and leads to a whole host of other symptoms, both physical and emotional. Then there's having to physically get up. I remember there were nights when I would put towels down and have a pile of t-shirts next to me. You went through menopause relatively early. You still had young kids. How did that influence the experience? It was so lucky that I ended up being able to have two children back to back, given that I was in perimenopause. Editor's note, Watts had been told by doctors that she was close to menopause when she started trying for a baby at age 36. Because doctors had said the word menopause to me before I even had children, I was already mentally preparing for it. I knew it was coming for me, but it was quite debilitating because of my energy levels and disrupted sleep. Even when my kids were 2 and 4, I was experiencing symptoms and didn't know a huge amount about it. To be honest, it wasn't until I was maybe 45 that I really started researching it. Did you have a good doctor during this time? Thankfully, yes. HRT was pretty much an instant relief for me. It was something that I talked through very carefully with my doctor. He talked about my medical history and felt it was a great option for someone like me who was still working long and stressful hours. I think the important thing is to find a doctor who will listen to your symptoms and to go in with the right questions at the ready. At a minimum, your doctor should provide you with the education you deserve. It's easier said than done because by the time many women get to their doctor's office, they've suffered a long time and then they've only got 12 to 15 minutes on the clock. It can be emotional. What does the world need to do differently to support women in menopause, especially when it comes to symptoms as debilitating as hot flashes? We all need to empathize, and we all need to remain curious. The gender gap in women's health is so vast. I often wonder if this was something that men had to deal with, how the needle would move, and how quickly. But I'm just glad that menopause is finally taking focus now. That's why we created National Hot Flash Day, so that we keep that conversation alive and well. We need to name our needs and not feel apologetic anymore. Over in culture and news, Prince Harry reflects on his life as he approaches his 40th birthday. The prince said that being a father to Prince Archie and Princess Lilibet is one of life's greatest joys. This article is by Victoria Murphy. Milestone birthdays are often a time to take stock and reflect on where you are in life, and Prince Harry appears to be doing just that as he approaches his 40th birthday this weekend. The Duke of Sussex has released a statement to the BBC ahead of turning 40. In it, he has said he is excited about the milestone and that his children have given him a fresh perspective. He also told the broadcaster that his mission to continue showing up and doing good in the world would continue whatever his age. "I was anxious about 30. I'm excited about 40," the BBC quotes Prince Harry as saying. Indeed, much has changed in the last decade for the prince, as he has gone from serving in the military and being a working royal to leaving behind both the army and, more unpredictably, royal life to forge his own path. At 40, he is married with 2 children, and the prince told the BBC that being a dad has given him a fresh perspective and is one of life's greatest joys. While Harry is striving to raise Prince Archie, 5, and Princess Lilibet, 3, out of the spotlight, he continues to forge a public role for himself outside of the institution of the monarchy. The Invictus Games, that he founded in 2014 as a working royal, continues to be a significant pillar of his work, and he and Meghan have founded non-profit Archwell, which they describe as having the simple mission of show up, do good. Harry has put his personal life in the spotlight since moving to the U.S., with the release of his revealing memoir Spare and his participation in a Netflix series about leaving the royal fold. The past few years have also seen him focus on several court cases against British newspaper groups, as well as legal action against the U.K.'s Home Office over his security arrangements. Parts of this article were edited due to time. In culture and news, read the emotional note Tyler Perry wrote to honor James Earl Jones after his death. The Star Wars actor died on September 9th at the age of 93. This article is by Adriana Friedman. Tyler Perry is saying goodbye to a man who changed Hollywood with his acting. On September 9, the world learned legendary star James Earl Jones died at the age of 93 at his Dutchess County, New York home, per his agent confirming to People. Famous for his roles in The Lion King, Field of Dreams, and the Star Wars franchise, James made acting history as one of the few stars who achieved EGOT, Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony status throughout his career, although Deadline reported his Oscar was honorary. As many celebrities, including his former Star Wars castmate Mark Hamill, paid tribute to James amid his death, Tyler wanted to honor the incredible mark James made in Hollywood. As Tyler posted photos of James in various stages of his career, he shared an emotional note about the effect James had on Tyler's life as well. "Saying goodbye to a legend and a king," Tyler wrote on Instagram. "Thank you for your example and your booming voice that led the way for me and many others. You will be missed, my friend. Blessings to your family." Upon reading Tyler's heartfelt posthumous message to James, many shared similar sentiments about the actor in the comments. "He made our childhoods so much richer. Rest in peace," one person wrote. "Wow, 93, he lived a long, strong life." "Rest well, King," another penned. "An icon, whew. How blessed are we to have grown up under his voice," a different follower added. Throughout James's 60-year career, he made strides by amassing nearly 200 screen credits. Fans most notably recognized him for portraying the voice of Darth Vader in the Star Wars franchise, starring in the original trilogy, Star Wars: A New Hope, Star Wars: The Empire Strikes Back, and Star Wars: Return of the Jedi. James later reprised the now iconic role in more modern movies from the hit franchise, including Star Wars: Revenge of the Sith, 2005, Rogue One: A Star Wars Story, 2016, and Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker, 2019. He also voiced Darth Vader in the TV shows Obi-Wan Kenobi and Star Wars: Rebels. James will surely be missed. This next article is in Culture and News and Books. "I wanted a mother. I got dolls instead." In her new book, Bone of the Bone, Sarah Smarsh opens up on growing up with an unavailable mother and growing into someone different. And this article is by Sarah Smarsh. "On a handful of Christmases and birthdays, my mother gave me a fancy doll with a porcelain head, sausage curls, and a soft body dressed in 19th century garb. These mass-produced dolls were not exactly high class, but cost as much as 2 or 3 cartons of Marlboro Lights. No small sacrifice in our parts. Mom presented the frilly effigies as items that I should cherish. While I never wanted such things, and quietly disliked them, I suspect that my mother admired the dolls' rosy cheeks and roughly Victorian dresses in authentic ways. She genuinely relished and excelled at the tasks associated with traditional domestic femininity: baking, decorating, applying mascara, wearing high heels, being an object of desire. It is not unlikely that she herself once wished for such a porcelain little girl in a household even poorer than ours. Meanwhile, she openly hated the presence of the living, breathing little girl whose childhood had interrupted hers. While shaming and wild verbal rage were routine, and while spanking and an occasional slap in the face are hardly worth mentioning about a 1980s household, worst was the absence of hugs, kind looks, or loving moments that I imagine soften the sting of other parents' failings. The dolls she gave me were a lot like her, pretty but not inviting touch. I remember her holding me just once during my entire upbringing, after I received the female rite of ear piercing at the mall when I was 5. Occasionally, at night, after being tucked into bed by my father, whose own self-absorption engendered negligence but few outbursts, and whose affection, while typically blurred by whiskey or stress, I sometimes could feel, I slipped back out of my bedroom and stood anxiously in the hallway until I found my courage and entered the edge of the living room, where my mother sat, to plainly ask whether she loved me. Embedded in the question was not a manipulation, but an honest accusation. I knew that she was supposed to. She would become uncomfortable and say, "Of course I love you," with an eye roll. I would return to my bed in the same emotional agony that propelled me from it, mitigated some by having expressed myself in the situation. While survivors often recall perceiving abuse and neglect as normal, I took note of the contrast between my domestic situation and that of other children. Once, Dad and I pulled up to a trailer home, and my friend emerged to climb into our work truck. While we were pals in kindergarten class, she drove me nuts staying at our house. After she and I shared a bubble bath in my mother's large tub, she cried as I dried myself off and tied a towel around my body. She didn't know how, she said. Similar situations were common. When adults weren't around, other children were always crying and saying they didn't know how to do what I was doing. Prepare food, find their way home, get the mail. My absence of parental care was revealed again and again until, instead of presuming myself unlovable, I assessed myself to be unloved. While more accurate, I cannot say the latter feels any better. I did not, of course, have the maturity or knowledge to understand that some adults are incapable of feeling or expressing love, such that the rejection still felt entirely personal. I was good and lovable, I felt, but the person who mattered most couldn't see it. A sunny child by nature, I found outlets in school and books, nature and animals. Nonetheless, alone at night in my severe circumstances, I sometimes longed to die. My most pitiful memory, around age 7, is of taking a steak knife from the kitchen and sitting on my bed with the knife pointed at my chest. I don't think I considered killing myself. The true aim was that my mother would walk in, see, and suddenly awaken to my goodness. I held the knife so long that my small arms ached. It was bedtime, but no one entered, not even my dad. I returned the knife to the drawer and tucked myself in under the gaze of the Victorian dolls. When my mother did welcome my presence, usually it was for my exploitation. To massage her feet, help clean the house, confirm that she looked beautiful in a photograph. While she might have received a mental health diagnosis, were we of a class and culture with ready access to health care? More important, in my view, is that her aversion to intimacy surely related to her own profound childhood trauma. More important still, looking back, she was just 17 when I materialized in her womb. Indeed, her cruelty toward me dissipated with age, as a dangerous fog burns off by midday. Environmental effects go only so far in explaining personality, though. I myself never developed into an abusive or narcissistic person, nor did my mother's mother, who had the saddest origin story among us. I occasionally heard that my mother's nature showed traces of her biological father, whose violence my grandmother fled to save her life years before I was born. In the end, who knows why cycles of human behavior begin, continue, and end? The cycle I was born into involved such emotional desperation that I appreciated a collection of Victorian dolls merely because my mother had given them to me, which implied attention. Never mind that giving them to a girl who plainly coveted her brother's toys further confirmed that she perceived or validated little about my real self. That self was beaming through all the while, plain to see now in orange-tinged photographs. On Christmas morning, gazing at my little brother's gray trench coat and matching Sherlock Holmes' hat with envy. Outside, developing a very accurate arm with a baseball, a football. Looking stricken after my brother received another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles action figure for his birthday. Dapper in a button-up shirt tucked into navy slacks and a maroon clip-on tie for, hilariously, my first day of Catholic Sunday school. I was a cisgender, heterosexual girl who sought adventure and comfort. These virtues tended to manifest in the boys' section. Perhaps for all my mother's femininity, I'd also internalized a negative association with being female. Both of my parents plainly favored my brother, though I wasn't conscious of it at the time. While my dad performed some domestic duties that relatively few men did at the time, combing my hair before school, changing my brother's diapers, he was absent in ways that, true to his generation, placed most of the onus on my mother to do the nurturing for which she was so badly equipped. Had either parent looked, they would have seen me spending hours sketching on yellow legal pads, their blue lines blurred and puckered where an adult's wet glass of instant iced tea had been set for lack of a coaster, with whatever sorry ballpoint pen or crusty pencil I could find in the junk drawer. I bestowed my objectively impressive drawings upon any adult present, leaving no question about my talent. Surely the welcome gift of art supplies would have been permissible along gender lines. Yet the doll giving persisted, indicating not just sexism, but one of its many enablers, lazy disregard. I am not speaking here of the inattention common to parents of previous generations. Being left untended, suited by independent personality, where today's hypermanaged and uber-tracked childhood would have oppressed. Rather, I'm talking about being simultaneously unloved and unseen, and the way in which these experiences often intertwine. Real love requires true attention, seeing another being for what they are, rather than casting upon them projections of our own pain. This love holds the power to remove not just the selfish veils that harm domestic relationships, but the ancient, disastrous veils of the world, stereotypes, hateful prejudice, ugly cartoons. Being female, a child in rural poverty, and the daughter of at least one narcissist, the frustration of being unseen, and by extension misunderstood, haunted me from a young age. What my treatment at home and in society suggested I was, a burden, redneck spawn, even an apt recipient of dolls in lacy dresses, felt to me so plainly incorrect as to cause anguish. For my child self-intuitively knew that to love truly is to look closely. During my teenage years, as savage irony would have it, the mother incapable of loving me in childhood turned out to be my only family member who could relate to the woman I was becoming. Unlike the rest of my clan, she was a reader, an artist, a woman of words. More fundamentally, we each possessed an organic paganism that my practical no-nonsense grandmother, who had permanently taken me into her loving home when I was 11, did not. Mom perceived the world as a matrix of vibes and dressed like Stevie Nicks. I communicated directly with the natural world and found emotional satisfaction in funerals, rare events where adults cut the crap and showed their feelings. When I stayed at her house, in the evening we pored over the same astrology books, and in the morning we split the newspaper. There were, too, as I came of age, remarkable physical similarities between my mother and me. She had brown hair and eyes, and mine are blonde and green. She was an inch taller. That's about where the outward differences between us ended. Our looking shockingly alike, combined with our relatively small difference in age, meant that by the time I was a teenager, we endured male attention at the same time and in the same way. While her self-centered impulses persisted, often to damaging effect for me as I entered adulthood, I found our points of connection worth preserving. Amid her new drinking problem and my new life at college and beyond, I learned to protect myself from her worst tendencies. Over the years, and not without torment and grief, I accepted that contrary to cultural insistence otherwise, not every mother's love is a precious and unsurpassed thing. We were more like sisters, maybe, anyway. There was no one with whom I'd rather discuss dark novels, the occult, period fashion, artists of the early 20th century. As my experiences with womanhood mounted, our shared knowing about sexism deepened. If at work my intelligence went underestimated, or my presence in a meeting full of men was deemed an erotic danger, she required no explanation and extended total solidarity. Once, when I was in my early 30s and she was approaching 50, I fretted over whether wearing a pair of red heels to work meant I was part of the problem. "Wear the heels and take whatever it gets you," she said. "They'll call you a slut either way." I realized, cautiously, that we were becoming friends. Parts of this article were edited due to time. There is also a book that accompanies this article, Bone of the Bone, by Sarah Smarsh, Essays on America or a Daughter of the Working Class. And it's $23 at Amazon and $28 at bookshop.org if you're interested in purchasing the book. In culture and news, Joanna Garcia Swisher opens up about her friendship with Reba McEntire. the sweet Magnolias actress is still learning from her former Reba co-star. This article is by Adriana Friedman. It's been almost 20 years since Joanna Garcia Swisher was on the air alongside Reba McEntire, but she still has nothing but love for her TV mother-turned-friend. The sweet Magnolia star did a video interview with She Knows, where Joanna was given a picture of her former castmates from her time filming the hit sitcom Reba. As she held up the photo of her Reba Christopher Rich, Melissa Peterman, Steve Howey, Scarlett Palmers, and Mitch Holloman, Joanna revealed how having Reba in her life made an impact that lasted way longer than the comedy's six-season run. "This was some of the best years of my life," she shared in a video posted on TikTok. "My first impression of Reba was I couldn't believe that I'm standing in the same room as Reba McEntire. Just being around her has taught me so much that you can be a boss and a really successful woman. I'm still learning from her, and she's still the queen. She's just always bringing it." When folks caught wind of Joanna voicing how much she adores her former co-star, it didn't take long for comments to roll in about their friendship. "That was so sweet. So many people look up at Reba McEntire as a role model," one person wrote in the comments. "I hope you'll do a cameo on her new sitcom," another added, referencing how Melissa will join Reba in the upcoming series, Happy's Place. "While we'll be keeping our fingers crossed to see Joanna and Reba together again, this isn't the only time the actress has made comments about the duo's bond. When speaking to Good Housekeeping back in June 2023, she revealed how she not only speaks to the voice coach on the regular, she'd love to be in a Reba reboot with her previous castmates. "We're all still very, very close," Joanna said at the time. "We're a big family. We always have been, and we always will. I would love to do anything with them. If the opportunity presented itself, we would be all in with 2 feet. Well, here's hoping we get to see Joanna and Reba reunited very soon." We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Again, that site is ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.